It's a comedy about fishing and casual sex that pulled a massive Oscar sweep and probably had some kinda effect on the field of mental health, because I couldn't just pick a nice baseball movie or a Nightmare on Elm Street sequel. I made us watch One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Okay. Let's say something on mic about it.
It's in my Amazon cart, the new cables, I swear.
I'll just...
Yes, I'll cut this in. So listeners, we have a loose cable. If you hear some rattling, that's what it is.
If you hear this sound, it means you won. Your prize is shut up about it. I'm going to try not to move my hand. Hi, I'm Sean Collier. I didn't think about the fact that we were going from a prison movie to a mental hospital movie.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of dudes confined places.
Yes, in the 70s.
Lately. I'm here with two...
escape convicts?
Yeah.
You sure? That's the best of a bad lot of options.
Yeah.
Here with two, I was about to be like two French Guianan prison guards. No, that's worse.
No.
Sure. Escaped convicts. I'm here with two coconuts that are supporting Steve McQueen as he floats away. It's Robin Hitchcock.
I do all my own stunts.
And Camila Adams. It's
a lovely bunch of coconuts.
Yeah. Papillon was last time. We landed on a 56. That is pretty darn average. But we can get mediocre-er. I checked. We did once land on the perfect 50 out of 100. Also in the 70s. That was for The Deep.
Oh, yeah.
The shipwreck movie with the wet t-shirts. Perfectly average.
And the thighs.
Right. Robert Shaw, barely alive. We shrug a lot, in fact. In descending order, the following films ended between 52 and 48. The Time Machine, The Toy, The Sum of All Fears, The Deep, Blazing Saddles, Stigmata, War for the Planet of the Apes, and Glass. Those are all movies where we went, fine.
I appreciated there was like there was varying release dates, as well as genres and actors. So it's like, it's really not, we're not saying that we favor one thing more than the other. Just ask for a competent film.
That's, we're sanding down our biases. It's not like, I like new stuff more. I like old stuff more. I like spooky. No, sometimes a movie is neither good nor bad. Right. It's just like, it happened.
Yeah.
I watched it.
You know.
You guys made a movie.
Yeah. Most of those are where we all kind of went, eh. And then Blazing Saddles, where we tried to hit as far apart as we possibly could.
Yes.
But hey, so it's One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. If you weren't here last time, I picked this movie. I had whatever bingo we've determined means that you pick a movie.
I mean, take out our massive bingo rule book.
Right.
Rifle through the thousands of pages.
Post-it note.
Which at any given week, we're pretty sure we know. And I made up some criteria for picking, in short, a canonically great film.
Yes.
That we hadn't seen and fit our, and was on our list. And I mean, this is one of those things that I was always like, I really should have seen that. Now I have. I think it's pretty good with some problems. Mm-hmm. Is that the way you're supposed to feel about this movie in 2022?
In 2022. That's the caveat.
Yeah.
I don't know. Cause I found myself, I know I've seen it once years ago. And I don't remember any feelings about it then. But now I'm very much like, you know what? Nurse Ratched seems to have gotten a bad rap throughout the years.
Yes. Yes. 100%. Like, I mean, we will get into it.
Yeah. She's been painted as this vile villain for so many years in pop culture.
Just a mildly frustrated woman.
That's right.
I have to leave because I hated her. Okay. And that dynamic is deeply uncomfortable to me.
Have either of you read the book?
No. No.
Okay. I don't read.
Right.
I was assigned this book in high school, which when you think about it is weird.
Yeah.
I was assigned several books with prostitution in them in high school. And like, no shame to sex work, but that's not really high school stuff.
And isn't the, my impression from research of the book is even like a little dirtier, like it's a little more explicit.
Yes. The book is from the perspective of Chief Bromden. And that is really missing from this movie.
Yeah, because like when he shows up later on, I'm like, who's this guy?
It's right.
Like,
oh, yeah. And having an outsider point of view on R.P. McMurphy really helps contextualize this guy kind of fucking sucks.
Right.
Right. And makes the Nurse Ratched kind of fucking sucks. Because like, just to be clear, like what she does to Billy is horrifying.
Right. Yes.
And the mental health care system depicted in this book and film, whether or not that's historically accurate, yes and no, right?
Right.
Is horrifying. Right. These people are incredibly mistreated.
Right.
Right. Having that outsider, for lack of a better word, perspective makes this battle of the wills so much more compelling. Whereas I feel like in the film version, it's very much like rah rah McMurphy, man of the people.
Right.
Shut up, bitch, Nurse Ratched.
Yeah. Well, hey, let's leave a lot of complicated thoughts that I have until after normal fun segments. If you, like me, never sat down with this one and you want to know beyond mental institution and a lady, like, which is what I came in with, here's Camila Adams to give you a 60-second recap of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. And go.
McMurphy has been sent from the work farm for evaluation. Is he really mentally ill? McMurphy arrives at the hospital and befriends the other patients with a special bond with Chief. We find out Chief has been pretending to be unable to hear or speak. Mac causes chaos and Nurse Ratched's order by hijacking a field trip and taking the group sailing and bringing girls in and out to party. He experiences electroshock therapy. Instead of obeying the rules, he decides to have one last party before he escapes, but he lets Billy get some ooh la la and he passes out, getting everyone caught in the morning. Ratched is pissed, threatens to tell Billy's mom, so Billy kills himself. Mac tries to kill Ratched and that gets him a lobotomy. Not being able to see him like that, Chief smothers him in his sleep and breaks out.
39 seconds. Very effective.
So, you know, a laugh riot a minute is what this film is.
And yet it's kind of a comedy.
Yes. Jack Nicholson's very good at walking that line.
Yes, he is.
Yes.
And there are moments, one of them's in the trailer. Ah, I said the word trailer. That means this is when we have the trailer segment.
Okay.
Do you think there's anything wrong with your mind, really?
Not a thing, Doc.
Excuse me, miss. Do you think it might be possible to turn that music down so maybe a couple of the boys could talk?
Your hand is staining my window.
God almighty, she's got you guys coming and going. A little change never hurt, huh? A little variety.
Oh, Jesus!
Oh, come on, you're not gonna say that now. You're not gonna say that now. You're gonna pull that henhouse shit now. When the vote the chief just voted, it was 10-9. Now I want that television set turned on right now!
I don't think he's overly psychotic.
No, I want something done!
I think he's dangerous.
Jesus, I mean, you guys do nothing but complain about how you can't stand it in this place here, and then you haven't got the guts just to walk out. I mean, what do you think you are, for Christ's sake, crazy or something? Well, you're not.
We're from the state mental institution. This is Dr. Cheswick, Dr. Tabor, Dr. Scanlon. I'm Dr. McMurphy.
How about it, you creep, you lunatics, mental defective?
I don't really have meaningful thoughts on this trailer other than, like, they made them differently back then.
Yeah, they're very long-winded.
But that moment in the trailer when he decides to try to, you know, get rid of the harbor master by saying that they're all doctors from the and introduces each of them and they each give their little doctor nod. That's hilarious.
Okay.
That should have been the end of the trailer.
Yes. Like, that's how we do it now.
Right. No, all I said to the trailer was pick up fucking genre. Like, what are you, are we scared? Are we angry? Are we happy? Are we silly?
Yeah. The music was.
Yeah. it's funny sometimes. The two responses I had to Camila, if I remember them both, one was, I didn't think that the chief would have, I'm sorry, I never got. Really got his last name, Bromden.
Yeah, I think you might only know that if you read the book.
Oh,
yeah.
Wait, so yeah. That's whose perspective it was from, yes. The book? Oh, I thought you were talking about the doctor, the male doctor.
No, nope.
The psychologist.
Nope.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know his last name.
I was so shocked when he spoke because I thought that was just a Simpsons joke.
Okay, when I finished the movie, I was like, I'm going to go watch the Simpsons joke.
Yeah.
That's not available in the world.
Really?
Oh, right, because that's in the Michael Jackson episode of The Simpsons, which Disney Plus won't put up.
Wow.
Yeah. He goes to a mental, Homer is put in a mental institution for wearing a pink shirt. I think that was the gif I put when I was watching this movie.
It is.
And meets Michael Jackson in there, but then there's like four
just to
Cuckoo's
be clear
Nest references.
He meets a large dude, white right. man who says I'm Michael Jackson. Right. It was right. voiced by Michael Jackson under a different name,
right?
It, as I recall, is a good episode.
Yeah. It is pretty good.
Yes. I remember it being like it's not a lot of Simpsons episodes I remember, but that was definitely okay. one of them.
Since you can't see it, the joke is not Michael says Homer, this is the chief. He never talks. He never responds. And Homer says, "Hi, chief," and the chief goes, "Hello." Yeah. It's about time somebody reached out to me. So when the chief actually, I thought it was just a joke.
I cannot remember. Yeah, I read the book in high school, right? Yeah. I can't remember if they establish in the book that he is just not speaking by choice, or if it's meant to be a surprise there too.
I love the reveal in this.
I completely agree.
He's just like juicy fruit. He's like, what?
Yes. Like, okay, Jack Nicholson. You know, so I've probably talked about this before. When he won for As Good As It Gets, my dad said, well, the name of the category is Best Actor.
Right.
Right? And now I say that about Denzel Washington, right? Like, every year that Denzel Washington is nominated, I'm like, the name of the category is Best Actor. Right? God damn it, Jack Nicholson is really good at acting and being a movie star. He is just such a good screen presence.
Well, and that might be... I don't know if problem is the right word, but that might be the disconnect between on paper and in the book. This guy is really causing the problem.
Oh, yeah. He is a total fucking asshole.
Right.
But you just like Jack Nicholson doing things in his charismatic way. That's, that is a little bit of dissonance.
No, I mean, I agree. I really enjoyed Jack in this role to the point as to where I actually found him attractive, and this is the first time I've ever found Jack Nicholson attractive.
I normally find him attractive. 70s Jack Nicholson is hot. Yeah.
Oh, the 1970s Jack Nicholson.
Oh, yes.
A lot of people would say that 70s Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I'll allow it.
You, you know that clip of Jennifer Lawrence?
No.
She's at the Oscars being interviewed, and he walks in behind her, and she kind of gives like a, oh my God, that's Jack Nicholson. Like,
I love when celebrities are impressed by other celebrities.
Right, right.
That's the first time I think I've ever felt like actual shock.
I hope you got a fan here.
And he sees the camera, sees her, leans in and says, you kind of look like an old girlfriend.
Ugh.
And she says,
do I look like a new girlfriend?
I thought about it.
It's like, yes.
No! Mm-hmm.
By the way, this will fit nowhere else. When Scatman Crothers showed up.
I thought I'm of like, both of you.
I was like, hey.
It's great. It's great to make the connection, but I'm like, man, these two have a bad track record specifically for Scatman when they get together. If they were in a third movie, it's just, you again.
I started to play it out in my mind like this is the prequel to The Shining.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was released in two New York theaters on November 19th of 1975, then slowly rolled out across the country, didn't go to number one until February 11th of 1976, technically its 12th week of release. It stayed in the top spot for 6 weeks, lost 1 week to Taxi Driver, which is a one-week number one movie, because then One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest came right back, won another 2 weeks. that covered the lead up to Oscar night, which would end up being pretty big for Cuckoo's Nest. We will get back to it.
Camila was born in that week. The Taxi Driver took that top spot.
Yeah, it's February 76.
You've said before on the podcast that was.
Cuckoo's Nest made about $109 million domestically. That's a lot. Wow. That is more than $600 million in 2022 money.
So wait a second. What? Why?
Just a giant hit.
People were Everybody went. I got to go see this weird mental hospital dramedy.
In short, yes.
Is Jack Nicholson a big name then?
How much of it happened?
No, this was early in his superstardom. Like, he was a star. Most of that money happened in 76 during the run-up to the Oscars.
Okay, that was going to be my question.
Yeah. In fact, it outgrossed every movie that came out in 1976.
Holy shit. Wow.
It's number two for 75 because Jaws. But nothing came out the following year that made more money than Cuckoo's Nest made just after January 1st. Everyone in the world went to see it.
Do you think that maybe a lot of people were familiar with the novel?
Yeah, the novel was a big hit.
Yeah.
And that's why I listened to.
I think if you look, you know, at these charts from before the 80s, all of the stuff we added recently, stuff would just catch on and everybody would go and it would just be the movie that everyone's seeing.
Yeah, it was less to choose from. Like, we have, what, three channels at home?
And you didn't have VHS. You didn't have a lot of movies on TV. So it was like, you got to go to the theater to see the movie that people are talking about.
Right.
Oh boy, expensive baubles.
Expensive baubles.
This won 5 Oscars. I bet Robin knows them.
Yes. I mean, listen, anyone who knows any Oscar trivia knows.
Yeah.
Like, they'll ask this at bar trivia. This is one of 3 movies to win the 5 big awards. So it won Best Director for Milos Forman. It won Best Actor and Best Actress for Jack Nicholson and Louise Fletcher, respectively. And Best Picture and Best Adapted Screenplay. I do not know who adapted the screenplay. But regardless.
You know, whoever. Right. Sorry. As a writer, I apologize, but whoever.
And I know that Brad Dourif was nominated for Best Supporting Actor.
That was one that it did not take.
I do not know what its other nominations were.
This is slowly becoming the Brad Dourif podcast.
I know, right?
There were 3 others: original score, cinematography, and editing.
Cinematography. Okay. That's very much like we put a camper in a room.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. I got to say something about Brad Dourif right now.
Mm. Oh, I was about to anyway.
I was not prepared to be attracted to him in this film.
Yeah. It's a little off-putting.
Yes. I would also like to provide a visual aid.
This little floop.
That might explain why.
When Jack Nicholson's like, he's a good looking guy, isn't he? One, yeah, kind of. And two, especially in this room.
Right.
Yes.
He is the Brad Dourif.
I mean, it's him or Christopher Lloyd, I guess. Yes.
Sort of, kind of.
Yeah. Okay, so here is why. The second photo.
Is that Colin?
Is Colin Diedrich in high school.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know Colin in high school.
There you go.
But I feel like I'm allowed to retroactively find his teenage self attractive without being a creep.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah.
I can't be like sneaky MVP Brad Dourif because it's Jack Nicholson and Louise Fletcher. But like, he's right there.
So good. Yeah.
He is
honestly
excellent.
I wonder, I don't know who else was nominated that year. Like, Chris Sarandon was for Dog Day Afternoon. I'm not sure who else, but I feel like Brad Dourif may have had a shot at this if it weren't like, well, we got to give an Oscar to George Burns. He's George Burns, right?
Right, right.
So
I was just going to say, if you don't believe in the power of Brad Dourif, what you have to watch, surprisingly, is The Exorcist 3. The Exorcist 3 is pretty good.
Weird.
I've never seen The Exorcist 2.
Isn't it supposed to be like god-awful?
Yeah,
okay.
I don't think that one worked. Exorcist 3 did. It has more involvement and more connection to the original. But the centerpiece is that Brad Dourif is a maybe possessed prisoner. And George C. Scott is the like guy investigating what's going on. And they have like a, you know, God devil argument alone in a cell, and it's brilliant.
Well, what I did watch, because the Simpsons episode was not available, was the X-Files episode Beyond the Sea.
Yeah.
Basically the same plot. Which I'm pretty sure is the first thing I ever saw Brad Dourif in, because I watched that show when I was a kid. You know, I watched it as it aired. Oh my God, what a classic episode of television. If you have not revisited it recently, highly recommend.
Well, he does not have an Oscar for this. He has a Golden Globe.
Good for him.
This won 6 Golden Globes, the same 5 plus Brad Dourif. And he has a BAFTA. This won 6 BAFTAs, including Brad Dourif, not screenplay, but editing. But yes, he has 2 shiny awards.
So I stand by my, I think he would have won if it was not for we got to give George Burns an Oscar.
Right.
Which, like, yeah, you do. Also, I have seen The Sunshine Boys because of my Oscars quest, and, like, he's very charming in it.
I'm sure. Yeah. Sometimes things just are nice.
Yes.
But, yeah, this was, as Robin pointed out, one of three movies in history that won those big five, culminating in Audrey Hepburn joyously announcing the Best Picture win.
Oh.
We have a clip.
Our next presenter is the very essence of stardom. A breath of spring and the scent of mimosa. You've been away far too long. Welcome home, Audrey Hepburn.
The nominees for the Best Picture of the Year are Barry Lyndon, Dog Day Afternoon, Jaws, Nashville, and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. The winner is One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah. I haven't ever seen that before, so I'm guessing what my reaction is.
Yeah, I don't know if someone's on a social media detox. Robin hasn't looked at her Facebook Messenger in about a week.
Oh, I had like a hard app notifications reset, and I figured this out yesterday because I went into my group chat on my computer and was like, people have been talking for days without me. So I noticed, like, shortly before I got here that I've been ignoring you on Messenger, and I apologize.
Several days ago, I watched a couple of the speeches. Audrey Hepburn, like, had not been seen in a while.
God, I love when they do that. It's
I think it's Gene Kelly hosting, and he gives this, like, welcome home speech. Yeah. She says nothing. She just does the nominees. But when she opens the envelope, she goes like, one flew over the cuckoo's nest. And it's like, I don't think you saw the movie. I'm not sure that's the tone.
Right.
I could do a deep dive on legacy actors presenting Best Picture and how it went. Like, obviously, Jane Fonda saying Parasite will just like live in my heart forever. Harrison Ford being like, you brought me up here so I could give an award to Steven Spielberg, but oops.
Shakespeare in Love.
Harvey Weinstein had something else to say. And Jack has done it many times, I'm pretty sure.
The winner is The French Connection, Rocky, Annie Hall,
Crash, The Departed.
Yeah, I hope he does it. Again.
Oh, he is not well enough to do those things.
He was at a Lakers game being fairly normal in like November.
But isn't that like his home set, though? Like,
that's
practically his apartment at this point. The other two, It Happened One Night and Silence of the Lambs, those are the only three, those and Cuckoo's Nest, to win
the
big five.
Take that to bar trivia, because that will be asked there. Yeah. Wait, I had another bit of Oscars trivia.
Do you know the four that came the closest? Say your thing first.
I was going to say Michael Douglas won an Oscar for producing this movie.
That's right.
His first Oscar.
Kirk Douglas originated the role, the Nicholson role on Broadway.
Oh!
Bought the rights, but that was 10 years earlier.
Right.
It went through a cycle of maybe this director, maybe that director. By the time they got it going, Kirk Douglas was just too old.
Oh, wow.
He's too old.
Wait a second. Didn't he live like 40 more years?
Like he just died 50 like more last years. Week, didn't he?
He was too old for the character.
Oh, I thought you were saying he was too old to produce.
Me too.
No. He bought it so he could play it.
Right.
And he was probably 50 plus, and that character's a young 30. You know, he's announced as 38 and is supposed to look younger than that. So it wouldn't
Jack
have looked
Nicholson
right.
was 38 in this movie, which was surprising to me. I am 38.
Yeah, but
I feel older than him.
I'm 37, and I went, this feels right.
Okay. I feel significantly older than him.
So Kirk Douglas sold the rights to his son, who opted to produce it. Gene Hackman, James Caan, Brando, and Burt Reynolds all turned the part down before it went to Jack Nicholson.
Wow.
Oh, R.I.P. James Caan.
Oh, what are the four movies that have four of the five?
Oh.
Now it's just for you.
Okay. Right.
Well beyond bar trivia.
God, yeah. Can I think about it? Can I ruminate on this so we don't have a lot of dead air?
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll come back to it.
Okay.
And a number of movies have been nominated all over the place, but even that's not that common. Only three in the last decade got the five nominations in the five categories. Silver Linings Playbook had all five, only one actress. American Hustle had all five, but won none.
Nothing!
La La Land had all five, won director and actress.
Going through the movies that won Best Actor and Best Actress to get here.
I don't know if that does it or not. I did not note what the winners were.
Oh, so. I see. Right. Okay, so it might have won Best Actor, Best Picture, Best Director, sure. Best Screenplay. On the mm-hmm. Waterfront?
No.
I don't know. You're just going to have to tell me. I'm ashamed.
Four have four out of the five. They are Gone with the Wind, Mrs. Miniver, Annie Hall, and American Beauty.
American Beauty. Goodness gracious. Wow. That has not aged well.
You know.
It was questionable then.
I mean, I was 16, so I thought it was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen.
Exactly.
In my life.
No, I was like late high school. I was like, this is profound.
Yes. Oh my God, that plastic bag.
Yeah. And I'm just not going to revisit it unless I have to at some point.
Man.
I'm
like, you know. I did rewatch it as an adult, but prior to Kevin Spacey being exposed. Yep. And it is good. The acting, Annette Bening is. Yeah. Incredible. Chris Cooper's great. Mm-hmm. Allison Janney is great. Thora Birch is great. Wes Bentley is attractive.
Yeah.
And he understood the assignment. The cinematography is beautiful. There are things to recommend that movie, but no one should ever watch it.
It is interesting when you start raging against suburban pretense.
As we're recording this, there was a viral tweet that's like, it's really hard to believe, but in the late 90s, all the good movies were about how hard it is to have a job and health insurance. Yeah.
That
which
is,
I think we talked about in our Fight Club podcast.
Right.
That stuff is interesting and fascinating and works. The gay stuff, woof.
Yes.
I don't even remember that part.
Chris Cooper is closeted and gay and a Nazi.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He thinks that he sees his son going down on Kevin Spacey and then is like, oh, well, my neighbor is gay, so time to kiss him.
Right. Yeah.
And
right.
Then time to murder him because he didn't kiss me back.
Yeah.
Speaking of problematic stuff, this movie. The last thing on the fact was that, yeah, as you said, this is based on the book by Ken Kesey, who didn't like where they went about it, fought them all the way on everything, and claims has to have never seen the movie.
Okay. Well, I understand being really upset that they basically make Chief like a cameo.
Yeah.
That's like the point of view character.
I like this a lot. I don't know how much of that is Jack Nicholson and the fact that I'm really into 70s movies right now. But I want to make a point and a half because we've talked extensively about how I have trouble with insensitive portrayals of mental illness in movies.
Right.
This isn't like, you know, great at that either, particularly in the way that a lot of these side folks are, you know, kind of reduced to a couple of signifiers. However, I'm not going to put this in the same bucket as Split and Glass or When I Really Went on These Rants or a lot of like, oh, he killed everybody because he's crazy.
Right.
Because misguided and broad though it is, it's not demonizing or punching down at the mentally ill.
Right.
Much.
I would argue that most of these characters are not mentally ill.
Yeah.
Right? I think that.
And that is a truthful representation of the old school mental institution
system, right?
It was like a place to put undesirables, right? So mm-hmm. like it's something as simple as Billy has a stutter, right? We don't know how to deal with you because you have a stutter. People who were on the autism spectrum,
mm-hmm.
the people who were not speaking,
right?
All of these things do not actually mean that you must be locked away from society.
Yeah.
And yet these people were. And I said before we started recording that I was like going to get emotional about this.
Mm-hmm.
This is really difficult for me because I have bipolar disorder and I really struggle with my mental health. And like I do a ton of therapy and take a ton of drugs. And like mm-hmm. I am a functioning mentally ill person, but mm-hmm. I am pretty mentally ill. Mm-hmm. Right. And I know that in a different era, this could have been me.
Right.
And that's horrifying.
Yeah.
And then the problem is that it isn't that much better, right? Mm-hmm. I think that, you know, you alluded to this may have genuinely changed mental health care. There are a lot of things that were happening in the mid-20th century that made people kind of realize like, hey, what we are doing is not okay.
Right.
Right. And good. I'm glad that that happened.
Mm-hmm.
But frankly, for BIPOC folk especially, we have just transferred them to going to prison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is no better.
Right.
Yeah.
Possibly much worse.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think the reasons why I like what's going on here are, I think it makes two good points about institutionalized mental health services that were more relevant then, but not relevant now.
I was going to say also that it has not completely gone away. Places like this do still exist.
Yeah.
I've been in emergency treatment for mental health problems, and one of the things that is depicted well here is that one of the hardest things about that is being exposed to other people in crisis. Yeah. Putting a ton of people in crisis in the same room and telling you you cannot leave is a bad way to resolve a crisis.
Right.
Right. That's one of them. Yeah. It kind of illustrates that this isn't really a way to get people healthy.
Right.
The way to get people healthy is complicated and it's not always possible, but it does a good job of illustrating like, oh, this is a bizarre and not helpful environment.
Right.
And in the Nurse Ratched character, who, you know, has its own baggage, I really responded to showing if you put power and authority on a person in charge of a bunch of people who are going to present challenges to you one way or another, that power is going to corrupt you even if you have some good intentions deep down.
I mean, high school mean girl to nurse pipeline.
Right.
ACAB.
Right.
Giving people power over other people who are in crisis is generally bad.
Yeah. And for its flaws, I responded to those things very well.
Another flaw that I don't know if you are aware of, but electroconvulsive therapy is not like that and never was like that and is especially not like that now.
That's what I was surprised by. Because that's the Wikipedia article I pulled up at the end of the movie. It's in the Wikipedia article that someone's like, yeah, we really have a tough time convincing people what we are as a direct result of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest.
Yeah, because One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest also influenced other media portrayals. Yeah. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen Francis, but that is another, oh, this is torture movie. I mean, I remember an episode of Quantum Leap where Sam gets, and it's like, oh, it's torture, but it's not. Yeah. Now, there are drawbacks. I have considered it at various points and have not done it. First of all, it's hard to get because people don't understand it. Don't do it. But it does cause some memory loss, which is the main thing that has prevented me from doing it. But like, it is not painful. And the way that was described to me, which I think is a really helpful metaphor, is, you know, when your computer's not working and you shut it down and turn it back on again, that's what it is for your brain.
Yeah. I think I had it in my head that I was like, oh, people still get a version of this. But until I like dove into it a little bit, I didn't realize, oh, wait, this is kind of useful, and it is not at all what it's depicted here.
Yes.
I am sure there are isolated cases, but it was never like a punishment for misbehavior in a mental health place. That is a pure invention, I assume, of the book.
And that's the other thing. They don't touch on enough that what is often used as a punishment in these institutions is drugs.
Right.
Right? They give you drugs that basically take your brain away from you. And like, you know, they have all the scenes where they're picking up their drugs in the drug line, but they don't really explore that they would basically sedate people into being passive.
Yeah.
I said would. They still do that.
So here's my question for you, Robin and Camila, but you know, it's interesting that this is the one where you have the feelings that I had, dumb M. Night Shyamalan horror movies.
Yeah.
I mean, does that render you unable to sit back and watch a movie?
No, definitely not. It just kind of feels gross.
Yeah. Camila's microphone is far away from her mouth because she's kind of looking at us like, go ahead. Yeah.
Was there a direct question to me here?
When you have, I mean, honestly, this is a awkward and not really fair parallel, but I think it's comparable to when you were watching Blazing Saddles and you were like, I'm not doing this to myself.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. And you shut it off and good for you. That doesn't happen to me with problematic depictions of mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess
maybe it should. I don't know.
Well, I mean, I guess it all depends for me, just like for me, where Cuckoo's Nest was, I don't have very much, if any, firsthand knowledge of mental institutions or mental health issues. So I can comfortably, quote unquote, watch this from other depictions of the mental health institutes that I have seen in other movies, mm-hmm. this is pretty fucking tame.
Yes.
So this to me seems a little more palatable than most depictions that I've seen in other mediums of pop culture and things like that.
Do you have any specific examples? It's okay if you don't.
Not right off the top of my head.
I mean, I know
head.
Exactly
like,
what you're talking
like, I would
about.
Imagine, like, you know, Girl Interrupted, maybe. Like, I almost watched that this week.
Yeah, Girl Interrupted is actually very similar to this in a lot of ways. They do explore that the drugs used as control in that one. But it involves a lot of the, all of these people are here for different reasons, and treating them all the same way is not a meaningful approach.
Right. It seems like really, I don't know if this was just how it was done in the 70s, but it seemed far-fetched and just bizarre to me that they would all be in the same room.
That's how
like
they do
sleeping
it.
In the same room together, and just like there is no separation, there is no one-on-one, there is no
I think in reality you do both one-on-one and group, and there is a ton of evidence. I was literally I took an Uber here and was talking to my Uber driver. I was like we were talking about death, and I was like, you should really explore group therapy.
Wow.
Group therapy is really helpful, but you also need one-on-one therapy, which is not depicted here.
Well, I mean, not even just the therapy session, but just like the sleeping arrangements.
Oh, yeah,
and just like, you know, okay, now, you know, it seemed bizarre to me. And mm-hmm. also the way that they depict whatever their illnesses are, whatever their conditions are. I do kind of appreciate each character may have these different tics or these different things about them, but that's not just them.
Right.
And
yes.
That's what I appreciate in this movie. You know, the one guy who, like, I guess his wife was cheating on him. Mm-hmm. Like, it seems like he came in there on his own accord and just, like, needed a place to rest, which I think is a thing that was happening in the 70s and the 60s.
That scene where Nurse Ratched points out to McMurphy that most of the people are there voluntarily.
Right.
And because that is true, right? And it is also a self-perpetuating cycle.
Right.
I'm not in a position to judge this, so please don't take this as judgment. But, you know, people become reliant on that kind of structure.
Which can also be compared to prison.
Yes. People talk about that all the time. Right. Ugh. Dustin Hoffman and Papillon is like, I can't go back.
Right. I don't know how to function outside the world.
Yeah. So, but you are right. Like, this is not a totally, I'm not saying that this is like a totally corrupt depiction of mental illness in any way. And I completely agree with you that this does a great job of making these people.
Right.
Yep. I love Danny DeVito in this.
It's the quietest I've ever seen him in anything.
I'm giving this a really high score. And I think some of that is just, here's a parade of the youngest you've ever seen, people you know.
Exactly. Like Christopher Lloyd and a lot of those poor dudes that are always like typecast as the spooky people.
Vincent Schiavelli from Ghost.
Yes.
And, he's such an icon too, and I always forget his blank on his actual name. Michael Berryman, best known as the freakiest looking one in Hills Have Eyes.
Yep. That's the one I always think of whenever I hear that name. The Hills Have Eyes.
I know this is not the most sensitive moment in the movie, but when he's looking for the votes and just goes over to him and goes, no, and walks a ghost. Yeah.
It's like, yep.
One thing I found really confusing, and maybe this because I'm not 100% sure when this movie is meant to be set, and I think that was somewhat intentional.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't he say what teams are playing in the World Series? I feel like that's an important piece of information.
Right, like you just want to listen to the World Series, just want to watch it just for Scuzz?
Right?
You don't care about what team?
You make it general that way.
I mean, there were only three channels.
Right.
So to the McMurphy versus Ratched situation, I don't think she was struggling, man. Like, you know, I just don't feel like that there was a lot of like the situation with her and Bill, between her and Billy, that was a gross representation of her exalting her power over him. And that was wrong. And she knew better.
Yes.
But for the rest of the movie, I'm almost kind of like, she's just trying to do her job.
Yes.
Like, and Jack Nicholson rolls in and it's like, I'm going to shake things up.
I also think it makes sense. I talked before about how most of these people are, you know, air quotes, not mentally ill. It must be extremely frustrating for someone who is definitely not meant to be there and is there because he's gaming the system to show up and then be an asshole.
Right, to say things like, like one of the things was like, a little change never hurt, you know, a little variety and that. And she's like, listen, there is a structure. And you know what? As a mother of a toddler, I feel her.
Yes. I mean, for everyone benefits from structure, but anybody who has any kind of neuroatypicality, is that a word? Listen, it's more important for them.
Mm-hmm.
Justice for Nurse Ratched.
We need to transition out of this in a slightly lighter fashion. So here are some fun facts. My favorite is Will Sampson played Chief Bromden. He was pretty good. Not at all an actor.
Oh, really?
This... A used car salesman.
No.
No, a used car salesman met Michael Douglas on a plane and had a conversation. They had trouble finding a big guy to play Chief Bromden. Somehow they exchanged numbers. And this used car salesman happened to be in an area where he sold cars to a number of Native Americans, called Michael Douglas 6 months later and said, quote, "The biggest son of a bitch Indian came in the other day."
What?
Oh my God.
And that's why he's in this movie.
Okay, power of networking.
Right?
Yeah. Always have a business card on you.
Right.
And I guess don't be afraid to talk to your seatmate on the plane.
Yeah.
But that's amazing because this guy actually, I really enjoyed his performance.
Oh, he's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did he do other things? I guess there's not a ton of roles available.
Right. Because he's huge.
1977 Western The White Buffalo. He's in Poltergeist 2. He's in The Outlaw Josie Wales. So yeah, he did enough stuff.
Right.
He had a chronic degenerative condition that affected his heart, lungs, and skin. Died at 53 in 1987.
And the guy who we were talking about earlier who was going through the divorce, he died the year this movie came out. I guess in 76.
Rather. Really?
Because a doctor... Well, this is direct from IMDb trivia. Dean R. Brooks was a psychiatrist and director of the Oregon State Hospital where the film was made. During filming, Brooks correctly diagnosed William Redfield with the leukemia that would kill him 18 months later.
Oh my gosh. He was like... Hey, buddy, you've got some bruises.
I thought for sure I'd seen him in other things like later in life.
I also found him very recognizable. I feel like he might just have one of those faces.
Maybe this stuff before this that we saw.
Yeah, also possible. Yeah.
One of my favorites is that not Nurse Ratched, but her second in command, who was called. They looked at Shelley Duvall for that. So it was almost the entire principal cast of The Shining.
She does a very good job with a very tiny role.
Yeah, she's got like 10 lines?
Yeah, and she does a lot of face acting, backing up the Justice for Nurse Ratched situation.
Right.
She's like, these fucking guys.
This is my last reading from IMDb trivia, because I don't know how to interpret this. Because since you mentioned Justice for Nurse Ratched, Louise Fletcher was so upset with the fact that the other cast members could laugh and be happy while she had to be so cold and heartless that near the end of production, she removed her dress, stood in only her panties to prove to the cast members she was not a cold-hearted monster.
Get it, wow. Louise.
Yeah.
Work it.
Okay. Good. I think maybe you're just a bit of an exhibitionist and you're like, how can I work in a reason?
Look at me.
Again, do what you want. More power to you.
I'm curious if her career or lack thereof after this movie comes from people being like, I'm not working with that bitch.
Yeah, probably.
Mm. Yeah.
It seems very, I don't know, selective. What was it? Like Flowers of the Attic?
Yeah, what happened to her, Robin?
I do not know. That was purely speculative.
I mean, she's
in Firestarter.
She's in things. She shows up in things, and I'm who I am, every time I watch a movie, I count the number of Oscar winners and nominees in it, and I know that many times have been like, Oscar winner, when she pops up on screen. I know she doesn't not work, but she has not had the trajectory that most Best Actress winners have.
Right. It's some pretty stanktastic looking films. Yeah,
more of a Best Supporting Actress kind of trajectory.
And she's in Exorcist too. So I guess they were just like, let's get all of the cuckoo's nesters and put them in an Exorcist.
Maybe that was in the contract. One of the things that kind of just like... Really,
she is still with us, by the way. Yes. 88. Go on.
One of the things that bugs me about this movie is Scatman agreeing to let those girls in.
Yeah.
For like, what, $20 and some hooch and a chance at some
$20 was a lot of money.
Yeah,
then.
Okay, but I'll take that. But then wants to get beside himself when shit goes awry, talking about you fucking with my job. Like, dude, it was your job 20 minutes ago when you...
Yes, you are right.
And you know that there's a supervisor in-house and you are still...
That I couldn't believe. When she showed up, I was like, how did you... When it started, I was like... If he's the only one in the building, I can kind of see it.
Right.
But if she's down the hall and is going to, how is this going to go?
It's like, sir, you're not good at doing crime and I need you to fucking back the fuck up.
And even Jack Nicholson is like, your one job was to stay awake through what had to be a 8-minute sexual encounter and you could not manage.
So Scatman, that was all on you. He was so put out. It's my job, man.
91.
Woo!
I like it a lot. Camila?
67.
Seems fine.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of really good acting. It's just, mm-hmm. it was just kind of a slow move for me. Like, I feel like 30 minutes could have been out. Like,
I was surprised how long it
that
was.
Sailing exhibition, that shit was like, all right, man, we got it.
I admittedly did go make a snack during the
sailing. I fell asleep and woke up to somebody screaming about Lucky Strikes.
Hey, this is not, you know, a activist movement that's going to make much headway. Give people in institutions unlimited cigarettes, please. That I stand firmly behind this. Don't limit. Just have a button that they can push anytime. That helps people get through.
Right. Yeah. I mean, shit, that's the least of their worries at this point.
It is wild watching old movies and not even that old and just being like, God, everybody was smoking
all the time.
Constantly.
All the time. Ashtrays overflowing everywhere.
On the plane, it's like, did no one think this? Are you pumping oxygen into this tube?
How can anybody survive this plane ride?
Robin?
I'm going to go 77. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I do think this is a great movie. This, unlike American Beauty, I'm like, yes, people should watch this movie, but they should be aware of the context of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, there's certain little things like, you know, if you're sensitive to X, Y, and Z, right. maybe not.
Right. So, and like, this is not real, I think, as another
it's not a documentary. Yes.
78 and a third is, that feels good for now.
Yeah.
That feels about where it ought to be. It's interesting looking at a lot of these old, the great movies lists that came out around the turn of the century, and it's like, oh, we changed. Good.
Yeah. Some ways sense. Good, some ways bad.
Yeah.
Bingo card. Nothing.
I forgot my bingo card.
I thought for a hot second there was some snow happening, but I think I was confusing that with an episode of Law and Order.
Did... He closed Jack Nicholson's eyes.
No.
He reached for it, but I think he just touches his face.
I think he was just feeling for his breath.
I agree.
Okay. Nothing on the bingo card. Sorry to say. It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Sorry, I just chucked my phone. I just think that what's-his-name should have had his cigarettes. That was a bad response. Oh, he's running a gambling ring. Oh, I'm sorry. Did they enjoy themselves?
Right.
Probably kept them busy. You probably could just sit in the place because they're off losing cigarettes.
Right.
And
Danny DeVito trying to play the half cigarettes.
A nickel.
It's like, this is nothing.
But you know what? It is still something because Lucky Strike is non-filter.
Right.
I was just going to say, I don't smoke it. I know that.
So, Jack, come on now. You're just being a jerk.
Yeah.
Shall we open the Nope discussion?
No.
You haven't seen
Nope.
I
haven't seen it. Not unless you're going to talk spoiler free.
I'm just going to say, yup.
Yup on Nope.
We'll come back to it when Camila has viewed it. All I'll say is I've seen it twice, and that doesn't happen too often.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's quite good. Camila, what have you seen, if not
The
Nope?
Gray Man.
Okay.
I haven't watched The Gray Man.
Oh, my God.
Yesterday, I was like, I should watch The Gray Man so Camila and I can thirst together.
Right. I was pregnant within the first 10 minutes.
I just didn't have time to get around to it. But it's good, other than just being hot guys.
I mean, and I may be like overly biased because of the hot guy on action, like hot guy action movie situation, because there are some things like plot wise and script wise are just kind of like, really? That are kind of questionable. So if you remove the fact that, you know, I would lick all through Ryan Gosling's face and and jump on Chris Evans' abs.
And I like that little mustache on him, too.
His little trash stash.
Yeah. It worked for him. Wouldn't have guessed.
Right.
But it did.
Yeah.
Listen, sometimes you are so good looking that you could pull off questionable facial hair.
Right. Exactly. But I think, like, the dialogue and the delivery of said witty banter is amazing. Like,
I love witty banter in an action movie.
I absolutely love it.
I'm sure I will enjoy this movie. I have seen a lot of responses to it and a lot of, like, really cynical. Like, God, Netflix has become a content generator and not a film studio.
It's like,
this
is a movie about CIA agents killing each other.
Right. Like,
what are you expecting?
I don't need everything to be the power of the dog.
Right. Like, and it's going to have a sequel. It's like, I am on board for whatever this franchise is going to be. Like, I'm here for it.
If you're gonna, again, I have not seen The Gray Man. Maybe I won't like it. But go after, what was that movie with Gal Gadot and
Red Notice?
Yes. That is the empty shell of a Netflix film.
Really? I haven't seen that one. But
don't watch it. It's terrible.
I think you would like The Gray Man, aside from the cute boys. Like I said, the witty banter and just like there's so many like little things that go through, like the way Ryan responds to certain things. And like there's a point where he's handcuffed and he goes to like, you know, he's shooting off people and he goes to shoot the handcuffs off and the gun, there's no more bullets. And just like the look on his face. It's just like, you know, he doesn't like overreact to this. It's just real subtle, like, damn.
Also, that sounds very dangerous.
Yeah.
That's a good way to lose a hand.
Right? But, I would highly recommend it to anybody who likes action.
He's very good at this. I gave Red Notice and The Gray Man the same score. I gave them the same 6 out of 10.
I hated Red Notice.
I didn't.
Maybe I was in the wrong mood for it. That was the one where I was like, this is nothing.
I just was like, yeah, Dwayne Johnson and Ryan Reynolds and Gal Gadot were here being themselves for 2 hours.
Right.
Automatic 6 out of, it doesn't matter what else happened.
Right.
This is more than that. I liked it. I just kind of felt like, this seems like a lot of effort. Because it's a $200 million movie filmed all over the world with the Russo brothers and three gigantic stars with perfect facial structure. It's like, this was a lot of effort to go to for a normal ass pretty good action movie.
Yeah.
Netflix has this weird obsession, I think, with like, we're going to put all this effort in. We're going to bring all of these elements together. We're going to spend all of this money. And the one thing they don't do is like, and for what? And for what are we going to achieve with all of this effort? That's weird to me. I was probably responding to the hype. The hype around this was, we want this to be our Star Wars. And I'm like, you want this a lot. To be
Can we not do this? Yeah.
it is what it is. And what the purpose was to answer some of Camila's Dear Diary dreams. That was the point of The Gray Man.
So, a useful reason to make a movie.
Thank you, Netflix and Russo Brothers. I appreciate you.
Billy Bob Thornton was great, and Alfre Woodard was great a little bit.
I feel like she was kind of like, there wasn't enough of her.
No.
There never is.
I know. Yeah. Like, what is the deal?
Russo Brothers, please show some respect to Alfre Woodard. Right? Mm-hmm. When she was in Civil War for 8 seconds, I was like, what is happening? Did she owe money to the IRS? Why are you here?
Exactly.
I was so confused.
And she showed up. I was like, oh, great. Oh, that's it. Okay.
Right?
That's it. That sequence in Prague where he's handcuffed to the bench, that's really good. But I think I saw that they spent $60 million on that scene.
What?
And really messed up Prague for a while.
They blew up everything.
And it's like...
Poor Prague.
I hate to be George Lucas here, but it's like, you know, you could have...
Not
did this in a big green room.
Yeah.
Right. I appreciate when you go there, but I want you to go to Prague to shoot the scene in the cafe and then blow everything up in the big green room.
Right.
Right. It's anyway.
One of the things that I felt was missing was when he's like, I want everybody to come in. He's like talking about how he's hiring, like he's putting the word out, like the hits out on Sierra 6, and they show like all these different teams of assassins gearing up to come.
Oh,
look
I love
for
that
him.
Shit.
Right?
I'm gonna love this.
I was hype with that, but they don't really get back to that.
Oh, what? Come on.
So it's so it's kinda like, you know, like I was waiting for something like Smoking Aces when
Slayer
you know,
Fest 98.
Yeah. So that was kinda like, oh, and then it like kinda petered off.
Okay.
Anything else?
Nope. I think that's it.
Robin?
I loved Marcel the Shell with shoes on.
I thought you might.
I mean, I am the perfect person to love that movie. I laughed. I cried. I will say, so I laugh out loud a lot, which I think comes from working in live theater and live comedy where I laugh supportively. Mm-hmm. Once you start laughing, it comes easily. I laugh when I'm listening to things in the house by myself. I often laugh while I am editing this podcast. But other people who are normal, there's not a ton of laugh out loud theater stuff anymore. And you wouldn't necessarily expect this to be a laugh out loud theater. But I saw this in like a half full theater on a Saturday afternoon and people were laughing. It is surprisingly funny. I loved it. I highly recommend it. And it's like 88 minutes long.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
I always hate when I say this because I want everyone to go to the movie theater every day. You don't actually need to for Marcel the Shell.
Sure. Yeah.
You can wait.
Oh, wait. And I have another. This is just an aside. So we went to an open captions screening of this. That means that they put captions on the screen. Mm. Highly recommend this.
You do that intentionally? Is that a thing you do?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Huh. Especially when I go to the movies with Colin, because he has a processing disorder. And so captions really help him.
I didn't realize that. I didn't realize they were as frequent as they are.
They pretty much have it for most movies on a Saturday afternoon.
Okay.
Yes. Mm. Now, and this is for, so first of all, public service announcement, right, yeah, that exists at AMC theaters. And also, in the past, open caption screenings never had trailers because trailers don't have captions. Mm-hmm. That is no longer the case. So I very unnecessarily got stressed out about us not making it in time for the theater and then sat through 20 minutes of trailers I've already seen. So note that. I also wanted to say that, yes, I'm so glad that we do open caption screenings. It's incredibly helpful. But one thing that did kind of suck with this one is that some of the really cool animation happened behind captions.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to look at the shell.
You might cry, but it's a good cry.
I cried so much.
And you'll just feel a little better after. Yeah.
I also cry easily. I laugh, I cry. I have feelings.
Mm-hmm. Good. Good for you. I've seen so many movies that have like no cultural footprint, so let me just lightning round. You don't need to see DC League of Super Pets, but it has enough jokes. Mm. It has well-observed dog jokes, like, how do you beat Superman's dog? You put kryptonite in a piece of cheese. That's the kind of joke. The voice cast is great. Keanu Reeves should have been Batman at some point.
Mm. Now listen, we got a lot of Batman left.
I know, right? Apparently. Like, it's
technically, he is not in this, too late, in this movie, right, but I'm watching him here, and I'm like, how did this never happen?
Mm. This is true.
Yeah.
Like, I could see that. I guess they just weren't taking him seriously enough before John Wick.
You don't need to see it. If your kids want to see it, you'll laugh enough. Natasha Lyonne steals the movie.
She's so great.
And she just swears, and they beep it.
I love
it. Oh, I love that.
I love that gag.
What a choice. Yeah.
It's like one of four film gags that always get me.
Yeah.
Somehow, there was a screening of the Ron Howard Thai Kids Trapped in the Mine movie.
Why?
Remember when those Thai kids were trapped in that mine? He's got a 2.5 hour goddamn long TikTok of that.
TikTok?
TikTok used to mean something different.
I know.
I was like, what aspect ratio are we talking here? Because I'm getting upset.
Sorry.
You know it's only a matter of time, right?
Right. My professional life took over the modern world for a second there. In especially journalism, but also movies a little bit, a TikTok is one of those stories that you tell by showing day 9, 4:18 p.m.
Oh, gotcha. Is this a documentary or is this?
No, it is 2.5 fictional hours of blow by blow. The kids are still in the mine.
Why?
Remember our earlier debate, is Ron Howard a good director? Yeah. I've made up my mind. No. One, this is one of those, like The Impossible, like the Naomi Watts movie. Mm. This was inspiring. Don't make that into a movie, because when you make it into a movie, it becomes a movie about the three white British divers going over and showing all of the Thai people how to dive.
Mm. Right.
And it's
the family in The Impossible was Spanish. And
yeah,
they were like, let's just cast some English people.
Well,
Naomi Watts is Australian.
That's right. Yeah.
The people that the only reason.
Also, Ewan McGregor's Scottish, right? I'm very sorry that I just called him English.
Think
good
so?
God.
Yeah.
Okay, British. Or people from the British Commonwealth.
Yes.
Put it that way.
The only reason those kids are alive is because two exceptionally skilled British divers made it happen.
Okay.
Which is great in real life for those British divers and those kids. Not a movie.
But it kind of makes a white savior movie.
Don't need Colin Farrell, Viggo Mortensen, and Joel Edgerton swooping in to save the day. Viggo lost the Green Book. Wait, it finally happened. No, now he's a diver. He's
fold
small
that pizza
again.
In half. The only good thing in Green Book.
That, and I pulled out my phone to make a note in the theater, which I never do, because at one point Viggo's character says, that was exciting, not in a good way. And I'm like, that's the review. That's the whole review. Because it's like, I was tense for 2.5 hours and never entertained.
Yeah.
Like, it's just 2.5 hours of like, man, it doesn't look good for these kids. I know they get out.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'll end on a positive note, but briefly. BJ Novak, you don't get to be writer, director, star. You're not that talented. Pick a lane.
No, I'm not.
A lot of people really like that movie. And I'm like,
I haven't watched it. I have no interest in it. His lane should be co-parenting Mindy Kaling's
children's books.
I think he's a writer. And I think this movie, you know, shows that he can write a funny movie. But if he's trying to throw in big ideas and direct and star in the movie, that's beyond him. A lot of people liked it more than I did. I thought it was unnecessary. Here, let me end on a positive note. Billy Porter's movie is nice and fun.
Aww.
Anything's possible. It is a nice rom-com. It is set in Pittsburgh. It is incredibly Pittsburgh.
That seems really fast. Like, weren't they just here filming this?
I was going to say, I did not know that this was that it was already finished.
It's. I mean, it's not too complicated.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know.
Yay!
They go to Phipps. They go to the Aviary. They go to Warhol. They film it at Kappa. They take a civics class where they say facts about Pittsburgh mayors.
Yes!
It's not just for that. It's a very nice, pleasant, normal teen rom-com with immaculate color and style because Billy Porter is making it. So watch that, not Ron Howard's dumb shit.
That's why we need made for TV movies still, because somebody could have done that instead of Ron Howard getting a hold of this 2.5 hour long.
Please. It was a long night at the theater. Oh, I skipped Letterboxd for One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. By the way, on the almighty Letterboxd overall rankings, this is 90th overall.
Oh, wow.
This is the 90th highest rated film in Letterboxd, but also it's on the list Stanley Kubrick's favorite movies. Someone at some point...
The jerk.
They identified Stanley Kubrick's, I think, 90 favorite movies.
Wow.
A lot of them are expected. A few are not, including The Jerk is on the list. Mary Poppins is on the list.
Who doesn't like Mary Poppins?
I don't.
Texas Chainsaw Massacre is there.
I haven't watched it since I was a kid. Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Yeah.
Okay.
E.T. He loved E.T.
Who doesn't love E.T.?
Right.
And White Men Can't Jump is on Stanley Kubrick's.
So random.
You know, I keep pausing on White Men Can't Jump as I'm looking for something to watch on streaming and being like, not today. Mm-hmm. But I should rewatch that movie.
Oh, I forgot one that I watched, which was new to me, but old as fuck. Pretty Woman.
Okay.
I thought for sure I had seen it, and I started watching it at like 10:30 one night, thinking that it would I could lull me to sleep. Mm-hmm. I stayed awake for that whole. That movie is great. Do people know about this? This Pretty Woman, this Julia Roberts.
This
is how
movie.
I felt during Dirty Dancing. I was like, why didn't anyone tell me? Oh, you did? Okay.
I rewatched Erin Brockovich because you know how there was a meme going around, at least on gay Twitter, about like your RuPaul spoken word lip sync.
No.
Okay. Apparently, they did that on Drag Race, and so people were sharing movie scenes that would be their spoken word lip sync. And someone I follow posted a scene from Erin Brockovich, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to spend $4 and rent Erin Brockovich. I just got a raise at work. I've got $4 to rent this movie.
Make it rain, bitches.
Yeah. So that movie's so fucking good.
Yeah, I remember it being good.
God damn it.
Well, if we're doing classics, did go to see the TCM screening of Cabaret. A little overrated. It's good. It's very good.
Yeah. Listen, Liza and Joel Grey, they deserved those Oscars.
Yes. The movie itself.
Bob Fosse won Best Director for that. And
over Francis Ford Coppola for The Godfather.
Which I.
Wow.
You know, they were able to fix it 2 years later. It's fine.
Yeah.
But like, have you seen All That Jazz?
No.
Okay, you have to see All That Jazz. Okay. I only recently saw it, like within the past year, on an airplane seat back, and I was like, this is one of the best directed movies I've ever seen.
Wow.
So, like, they could have gotten to him later, too.
Yeah. What was that good is The Third Man, which I had never seen before.
Oh, my God, I love that movie.
And I
saw it. That last shot, that's maybe the best last shot of any movie ever.
That's excellent. I saw it with a shout out to the Pittsburgh Classic Movie Club.
Mm.
Google that phrase. And you'll find what they do. This was like a pastoral scene out of a movie. It's Friday night, and they're gathered in a nice barn in a park.
Oh,
and
cute.
Everyone brings their little camp chairs and their snacks. And the president of the club says a few things and then projects The Third Man up on the projector.
That's got to be the purest thing I've heard.
I'm going
so
to
beautiful.
This.
In the long time.
That sounds awesome.
As you're hearing this, Outdoor Wizard of Oz, August 12th, in a park in Bridgeville.
Talk to me when they're doing Outdoor Wizard of Oz plus Dark Side of the Moon. And then I will arrive.
Robin is here with her glow sticks. Yeah. Glow sticks and hot Cheetos.
I did that in the beginning of the pandemic, and it's fucking awesome.
Row House did it recently. Like, you could pay a ticket and they were going to do it. And I was like, I don't know if I want to be in the crowd.
Yeah.
That might be a lone thing.
At home.
Yeah, I did it ages ago, back way back when, when I was still in school. Like,
it rules. It is such a cool thing.
Bunch of roommates.
Yeah. So.
I should have, when all the drive-ins were doing retro stuff, someone was playing Wizard of Oz practically every goddamn week. Right. And I was like, all you'd have to do is get Spotify and press play at the right. Never did.
Well, it is tricky because you have to play the album twice. So if you can't pause, like when I did it at home, I paused it.
Right.
Right. To do it again. So I do think it's best to do a professional screening where they've sorted that for you. Because you also have to start it on the second Lion Roar.
Right.
Right. The best way to do this is to go see somebody who's sorted that for you.
Will we land on Wizard of Oz now? I don't think it's on our list. No, the number is 925, which wouldn't be in the W's anyway. That would be Liar Liar from 1997. Okay.
All right.
This was my favorite Jim Carrey movie.
He's very good in it.
As a child.
Wasn't this an answer to one of those film quizzes recently? Like one of the Twitter film quizzes I think this is the answer for.
God, I play so many of those that like I can't keep straight who did. And I truly will be like, didn't they just do this? And then I'm like, oh no, that was Movie Doll, not Cinerama or whatever.
I just save it for next time. But I always thought like, oh good, he's putting his wacky powers towards a movie with a premise other than wacky man is wacky. Like just the little nugget of there's a reason. Yeah.
All right. I'm looking forward to watching this again.
Okay, good. So
here we go.
What?
It's knowing what was the number one song in the 70s.
Captain and Tennille.
It was not Captain and Tennille. We are going the date that Cuckoo's Nest went to number one, which was February 11th of 1976.
Superfly. Why can't I think of the fucking Shaft? The theme of Shaft.
Mm. Let's go Hot and Cold from here.
Okay.
Goodbye, Girl.
What is that?
And I'm saying goodbye doesn't mean forever.
Oh, that's a nice song.
I don't remember the
name. I'm just going to say Cold.
I don't remember who sings it.
Elton John is going to be my Rihanna for the 70s.
Warmer? No, but warmer, bordering on hot.
Wow. Elton John? David Bowie?
Colder. This is an interesting mental exercise. Colder.
I was just thinking,
vibrant flamboyant
performers. Yes. Yes. I saw a Neil Diamond concert like 10 years ago. It was fucking amazing.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I have seen this person in concert, which at least tells you
Cher?
Still alive, not Cher.
Okay.
Billy Joel.
No. Billy Joel and Elton John and this person were people you guessed when I was desperately trying to get you to Jim Croce. Great job, Robin, on the correcting yourself at the end of the last episode, by the way. Which is interesting because the moment you thought of is a Cat Stevens song in Guardians Volume 2. And the clue was, like Cat Stevens, but not quite.
Right.
That's Jim Croce.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I have no idea.
You got to give us some
more. Elton John, Billy Joel.
What other white guy of about that age might I have seen in concert?
Bruce Springsteen?
No. If you lined all of these people and this guy up, he'd be
Paul Simon.
6 inches shorter than the rest of them. Paul Simon is correct.
So it's just Paul Simon by himself?
50 Ways to Leave Your Lover?
Correct.
Okay.
And I love Paul Simon.
I saw Paul Simon at my very first real concert.
Really?
Yes. It was Paul Simon and Bob Dylan at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, wow.
And my
your first real concert.
That's my first real concert, and I spent a lot of babysitting money on it. And my dad was like, I don't know why you're doing this. He's like, Bob Dylan has not been good live since 1971. And
I saw him in like 2019.
The way Bob Dylan is that if you get him on a good night, he's great. If you get him on a night like I did, he does not remember his own lyrics and mumbles a lot. But Paul Simon was fantastic.
Oh, he was great when I saw him a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have to accept with Bob Dylan that you're paying, $60 to be able to go into a room and be like, holy shit, that's Bob Dylan.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I was in the biggest room there is, and I still felt like, holy shit, that's Bob Dylan. Also, when I got home, I literally had a nosebleed.